Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slip. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slip. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Lunch like that. We'll talk about a team like that, but we are more concerned about a lunch like that because we are live on location day with Canucks Central. We are at the grand opening event for Andrew Sherritt Limited, and yes, lunch full on right now. People are taking part. Come on down. Join us here, 3625 East 1st Avenue in Vancouver. Grab yourself a bite to eat. Come talk to the experts in plumbing, heating, HVAC, irrigation, and so much more. There are day-only deals, so you're going to save some money on that project you have if you're a contractor. And you haven't been to Andrew Sherritt Limited, get here. Get yourself way better prices. In fact, today if you come down, you're going to save an extra 10% off your bill, including on the day-only deals. And as mentioned, put a little food in your belly as well. Mick Nizar joins me here. Again, 3625 East 1st Avenue in Vancouver. That's just off the highway on East 1st. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Feels like half the city's in here. It's packed in here. There's plenty of people to help you out. But, yeah, this is a... It smells great and it looks great. A lot of folks here today.
Well, I told them we were organizing a posse to go get revenge for the non-call on Elias Pettersson, and this is how many people showed up.
That's pretty good. You can rally the masses pretty good, Scott.
Let's hear from Travis Green before we get into this discussion more. And what has been a driving topic on my show for most of the morning, I want your assessment of that. First of all, here's Travis Green. Very frustrated last night, as many Canucks fans were, that Matt Grilcic's hit on Pettersson, which was way after the whistle, went uncalled.
I'm so frustrated with that. This guy's one of the best young players in the league. And he gets hit in a... He's totally defenseless. He's got... You know, it's 2 seconds after he lets go of the puck. I've watched it a couple times. He's unassuming. He has no... he's defenseless. And he feels like there's no way he's going to get hit in that spot. He's in a vulnerable position. Those are the hits that the league is trying to get out of the game, especially against top young guys, top players in the league. And I think Petey's shown that he's one of those guys. And it is frustrating for me as a coach to see some of the abuse he takes where he doesn't get called, and he works through it. He gets frustrated, and I know they keep, you know, he's not the biggest guy, but that doesn't mean you can take advantage of a player that's not ready to be hit, that's very late. That should have been a penalty all day long.
Nobody's going to disagree with that. Absolutely, that should have been a penalty. My bigger problem with this is that it has to be a penalty call, sure, on anybody, but not anybody's going to get hit like that, quite frankly. I don't think that Tim Schaller's going to get taken out like that. I think that is a hit where we're going to send a little message early in the game. It's not going to be an easy night for you. And when a hit like that goes uncalled on a star player, now you've set a precedent for the rest of the game. And the NHL, and certainly Canucks fans, but the NHL's damn lucky that he gets up from that last night and that one of their star attractions is rolling into Minnesota for Wild fans to see tomorrow.
This is the issue that we always talk about. It's being proactive instead of being reactive. Let's say he gets hurt. And then the NHL looks back and says, hey, you know what, maybe we should have called a penalty and, you know, we're going to hand out a one-game suspension just to say that we did something. That's reactive. And we continually have the discussion of, hey, how do you get ahead of these issues? And we had it with the Kachuk-Cassian incident, right? The incident happens. The problem with leaving it to the players to sort out on their own is that's a reactive measure. That's the NHL trying to step out and say, hey, you know what, this is your issue. No, this is kind of an NHL issue. They can police that themselves and try to take that out of the game. And look, there's a physicality element that we all want in the game. It's at times players are going to take advantage of that when they think they can because it's been policed as such that they can, and they will get penalized after the fact. You have to create a culture of how do we get ahead of a problem, not how do we solve a problem when it arises.
Who drives your business? The stars drive your business. So I am on the side of star calls. I don't need them all the time. I want 50-50 calls going in the way of the star player. That's what I want. And last night is particularly egregious because it's Pettersson. But I want McDavid playing. I want Pettersson playing. I want Panarin. I want all of these guys playing. I don't need them injured on plays where guys are willing to take liberties because, it might not get called.
There is a delicate balance with that.
Of course.
Too, because at the same time, I would say, is Brad Marchand a star player to you?
Of course he is.
Well, he's got some diving history in his, right? Mm-hmm. And so now if you're opening the idea to players, star players, getting preferential treatment to some degree, how much do they go ahead and abuse that? And now that's, you know, I think that's part of the consequences that you open yourself up to. But that's also a form of trust between the league and the players to say, hey, we're giving you something. You can't abuse it. And if you do, we are going to come down on you.
Yes, I agree with that. Make sure there's a consequence attached to that because the guys who've been called out for diving, they've cleaned it up in a hurry because they're embarrassed within their own sport because they feel like once they're exposed that while they were willing to threaten the integrity of game while it was being undetected, now that everybody knows about it and it goes to their reputation, they don't want any part of it. And, yes, we're getting texts on that. Just flopping all-stars is what I would be worried about if they call it like it with the stars, but they won't flop as today the NHL is right now. That's why you can't make it a 50-50 thing. I'm sorry. I want it to be a 50-50 thing. I need it to be a 50-50 thing if I want the best possible product. I don't want the gap between the Crosbys of the world and guys that play on the fourth line. I don't want that closing. I want that widening more than anything else.
And it's more about when people are really going to be watching your product, playoffs. If something happens to take someone out at that stage, that's a big issue. The NFL has gone through this with quarterbacks multiple seasons now. We're watching third-string quarterbacks in the playoffs, TJ Yates or whoever it is, and we're not seeing star QBs in critical times when, you know, drive ratings. It drives eyes to television sets, and it drives viewer engagement. If Elias Pettersson or whatever star across the league isn't playing in a first-round playoff matchup because near the end of the season or in game one, he gets taken out on a bad play, that's what we're talking about with star treatment. You need your stars playing in the playoffs.
Totally agree with you. And there are those on the other side, and I understand it. It's a good debate. GB, he's been on this all morning, or she, I'm not sure, GB, if it's a man or a woman. Calls should be earned, not given, just like a strike zone shouldn't change based on reputation. The more we go down that route, the more we're taking the outcome of games out of the hands of the players and into the hands of the referees and officials. It's already in the hands of the referees and the officials. By not calling certain things, they're helping determine the outcome that way. I hate that argument. Well, if they call it, then they're determining the game. Guess what? If they don't call it, they're also determining the game if it's a penalty and it's not called.
And I see another text here from Sonny just saying, you know, if the Canucks stood up for each other, maybe opponents would think twice about hits like that. Man, that happens all across the league. All across the league. So you're really just calling out 31 other teams. And that's fair, too. But and this is why we go to that proactive measure. You don't want to see stuff like that? That can come from a higher power, like the league office. Because standing up for each other, we've had this debate for the end of time. There's a reason this keeps happening.
Well, I saw someone text me earlier and said, hey, Pettersson had an option there. He could have elbowed him in the head or butt-ended him in the teeth, and he chose not to do it.
Great solution.
That's not exactly
what
I'm looking for. Sorry, that's not what I'm looking for my solution. That's not the hockey I would prefer. I want a physical element. Hey, of course I want to see altercations every now and then. That's not what I want to see the solution to that problem being last night.
Let's have our star suspended. That's a great idea.
It's a good debate. Keep hitting us up.
Also, sorry, yes, keep hitting us up, 650-650, but Travis Green, good for him for stepping out. We saw
absolutely
that with Ken Hitchcock, do that with Connor McDavid. That's at some point, the coach needs to step in and say something to draw attention to it. Now, Elias Pettersson leads the team in drawing penalties, all of that. But that was a good point for Travis Green to step up and say, we're getting to a critical point of the year. I want my star player protected, and I'm going to do this now.
And this happens not just in hockey. This happens across all sports where a team doesn't feel it's getting what it's earned, either from a publicity standpoint or a respect standpoint, and somebody has to be that vocal presence that steps up. And Travis Green's smart enough to know that if you do it all the time, it's not as effective. Pick your spots. And last night was the spot he picked. You can go back to last year. The Matheson hit on Pedersen. Green spoke up. Spoke up after that game. He doesn't do this that often. There are other games where I guarantee he's mad that Pedersen hasn't received a call or Hughes hasn't received a call. He doesn't say anything because it's not the right time. I thought he picked his spot perfectly after last night's game.
Yeah, it's one of the things that we keep highlighting with Travis Green, that he understands the temperature and he's very smart with his communication, both with his players and with the media. And, you know, he really has a pulse on things, and he knows when to push the right buttons.
And with all the texts coming in, we can all agree. I said this before. Yes, it should have been a penalty on anybody in that particular case. What we're talking about is star players, should they get a little more? Should they get a little more leeway? And I think they should. And other people disagree. That's fine. We can continue to have this conversation. One of the things coming out of last night's game was, well, it's a 4-0 loss, but Boston's a really good team, and I guess the Canucks just aren't there yet. Part of that's correct. It's absolutely true. Boston's a better team.
I mean, we talked about that yesterday, Tier 1, and what are the stages you need to get to that Tier 1 level that Boston is in?
Boston's a better team, and they played better last night, and it was very clear. It wasn't as though that was a coin flip hockey game. Boston Bruins, that's a well-earned victory last night. Here's what JT Miller had to say after the game on that particular subject and how much of last night's matchup speaks to where the Canucks are, I suppose.
All right.
Okay, we don't have the clip. I thought we had the JT Miller clip. The JT Miller clip. Jamie, you were on the phone with someone. Thank you. Jamie's back at Mission Control. Here's the JT Miller clip.
Anything special. I mean, they're a good hockey team, but like, I'm not sitting here saying, like, oh, man, we're playing this team tonight. We're a good hockey team. Like, we should have swag about that. We've proven that we could beat any team in the league, so I don't think anybody was worried about what team we were playing tonight. We didn't, you know, they won more battles than us and worked harder.
So here's what I like about that clip. They're nothing special. Okay, maybe that's a little disrespectful. That's one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. Boston's a really good team. You're not going to find many better than them, and if you do, it's a matter of debate. It's not even a fact. But what he said in the bulk of that is exactly what we talked about yesterday on Canucks Central. Does how they play in this game tonight determine how you feel about this team? And it shouldn't. And my opinion of the Canucks has not changed as a result of a 4-0 loss in Boston.
And not to qualify it, but, you know, third game, four nights, traveling a lot. And they've had a couple of those already this year, one versus New York, one versus San Jose, one versus Winnipeg, and, of course, that infamous Montreal game. So they've had 3 and 4 nights already this year. But the thing that I did notice is how together Boston plays. And at one point in the season, early on in the season, Canucks really played like a five-man group, and we talked about that a lot. It's how they're winning this defensive way of playing because they're playing as one. That's fallen apart a lot basically since December, and it was really evident yesterday against a team that was on top of it. They were taking so many chances, and any time someone jumped a passing lane, four other guys rotated and it was okay, and they caused so many turnovers and so many problems for the Canucks because they, again, from a pure skill level, I kind of agree with what JT Miller's saying. Are they really special? Krug, McAvoy, the perfection line, those are their skill guys. But overall, I kind of agree, but because they play together, like, that's the difference. That's the edge that Boston has over a lot of teams.
The floor is so much higher.
Yeah. It's true. Just go through the lineup. Again, they have talented guys, but as far as peak guys, it's like you see five players that are truly, they would say, hey, that's a skill player. But because they play so smart, and Bo Horvat talked about it, is how fast they are to get on top of you. And here's that clip from postgame last night.
Okay, they're just on you so quick. I mean, they hunt down pucks. They're relentless in their forecheck. And obviously they play well defensively, so that makes them a well-rounded team. And we've been doing that for the majority of the year. I thought we got outworked a little bit tonight.
Yeah, got outworked. details in the game as well.
Yeah.
There is a patient confidence about a team like the Boston Bruins, the Washington Capitals, the St. Louis Blues, that if they get scored on early, there's not a panic to their game. A game like last night where they probably feel like they should be up more than 1-0, and it was somewhat of a controversial goal, which didn't need to be as controversial as Canucks fans, and hey, myself at the time made it out to be, and it was a good learning point last night. We'll get to that in just 1 second. But they probably felt like they should be up 1-0. And you've seen teams like this where you come out of a period and go, man, we should be up more than 1-0 right now. And there's some sort of lull because you've expended so much energy. There's just this even keel confidence about a team like the Boston Bruins that, yeah, we just keep playing like this. We'll get the job done. And they did last night. And it shows up in the details. It's a small play. Oh, it turns out to be a big play because it leads to a goal. But just the awareness on that play of McAvoy.
Yeah.
Coming across, knowing the rule, which a lot of us didn't know. I've got my hand up. I thought that was offside during the review, and then it was correctly pointed out on the broadcast and on Twitter why that play was not offside, and the NHL did a good job with that review. But the awareness of, oh, I can't touch this puck yet. He hasn't tagged up yet, and then he touches it. It was well done. And there's little details like that in so many facets of the Bruins game.
I want to be really clear. That was an incredibly smart play by Charlie McAvoy. Like, to have the awareness to do that, the call was absolutely right. The rule sucks. We have to simplify the rule. Because Boston, and this isn't a Canucks thing. Like, Boston had a similar thing earlier this season in November. Charlie Coyle, a puck in his skates, and, you know, the timing of when he crossed the line came into question.
Yeah, but that one's a little different to me.
Sure, but just offside in general. Like, we can simplify offside is all I'm saying.
Yeah, we can. The reason last night's a bit of a mind bender is where the puck is. If that is a traditional dump in, we're not talking about it. But it's because the puck is just over the line and it's touched just after the player tags up,
yeah,
that everybody thought it was offside. If that puck's in the corner and it gets touched a second later, nobody's talking about it.
But we're labeling the play a dump in. And is that a dump in to you from Charlie McAvoy? We can apply logic and say, you know what, he does that purposely to retain possession. And so if he has possession, we have to give benefit to the doubt of the player to say, hey, you did something to keep possession of the puck. And if you have possession of the puck, well, then that's offside. And you can judge it off the neutral zone edge of the blue line. And that's what we need to start doing, not the across the entire scope of the line, and the player just has to touch the offensive zone side of the blue line. We can simplify it and say you just break the plane of the blue. That's it. And then that's onside, that's offside.
Yeah, this isn't a hill I'm willing to die on today. I thought it was well executed by Boston. I didn't know at the time that was not offside. They played it perfectly. If you see that as a small loophole in the rule, that's fine. Do I think we need more tweaks to offside and the review process in general? Yes, I do, but
absolutely
the actual rule itself, that's not one of my, here's my
they got
five
it right
point
yesterday.
Plan for the NHL.
They got it right yesterday. But as far as what the rule is, the spirit of the rule, you should be able to look at that and say, oh, we know what he's trying to do. That's, he still has possession of the puck. It's an intelligent play for him, but to me, perhaps down the road, if they go to expanding or, you know, go to a board governor's meeting and they start talking about it there, you could look at that and say, we could simplify the rule.
Very few opportunities last night for the Canucks to get into that hockey game offensively. They didn't create that much. Boston didn't allow them very much. And when the Canucks did get a power play, it went the way it's been going for quite some time now. It fizzled. It didn't look dangerous. And this is a problem that has been overshadowed by all of the winning. That what is statistically a very good power play overall has been one that's been running dry for quite some time.
And I heard you talking to Murph, and they've tried some different versions of it today, ones that we've spoken about going back to, you know, game 20, basically. There's a slickness to the power play that just isn't there. Zone entries are an issue, and, you know, Pettersson being a stationary part of the zone entries at times is a big issue. He's one of your skilled players. You should be utilizing him to gain the zone. And then just the staticness of what that power play is. That's That's the issue. It's they've become very predictable. I know Morph was talking about that. That's, to me, what teams are pre-scouting now. They're able to take something away. And Quinn Hughes' mobility and his passing should be a big feature of what the power play is. His shot should be your primary feature, and that's what it feels like it's becoming.
Dan Murphy was on with me earlier. Here's what he had to say about the Canucks' power play and perhaps some tweaks that it could have.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't mind that wrinkle if they ever used the guy in the bumper squat and spot. They hardly ever use that down low play back into the middle for the quick shot. They've done it. They've tried it. But, I mean, I'd like to know how many touches Bo Horvat gets on the power play aside from faceoffs. He never touches the puck. So unless they plan on using that, you know, down low back into the middle for a quick shot, which a lot of teams do and do effectively, like the Blackhawks, then I'm not sure it's going to make a whole lot of difference putting Besser there, because it doesn't seem to me like that spot gets used.
And the question I posed to him after that, and one you can speculate on for yourself as a Canucks fan, is if there was a different person there and a guy who was seen more of a shoot-first player, do they start to use that position more in the way that it could be utilized, in the way that Dan just talked about? It's not utilized right now with Bo Horvat playing there.
Especially when he doesn't touch the puck as much, and Murph alluded to that as well. It just, like, Bo Horvat has skill to his game.
Yes.
And it feels like it's being relegated to doing nothing on the power play. He's there for tip-ins, and he's there for rebounds, and he's there for puck retrieval. There's other players on the team that could feature with doing that role. And if you're not utilizing one of your best players to maybe play to another part of his game, well, what are we doing here? And I know it sucks to take Bo Horvat off power play one because he's had success there. It's just the way it's working. You have four guys that are trying to make this work, and one guy who not paying attention to, but they're not utilizing him at all. And Brock Besser moving him closer to Elias Pettersson because he's got to get going on the power play. What is it, 31, 32 games now that he hasn't scored? Going back to Nashville. You've got to create different leverage points for penalty killers to make decisions, make tough decisions. Right now, they're easily taking away Elias Pettersson. So how do you create another threat that opens up space for Elias Pettersson?
Well, there's one of two ways. You either alter the personnel, alter where the personnel are, or you have more movement to your power play in general. It's something we've advocated for quite some time. It's not going to work that way with power play number two, but there does appear to be enough skill and vision and creativity on power play one that if that's the way it was employed, that Pettersson, Hughes, Miller, these guys could be flowing in and out of different zones, and maybe that takes years. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to see more movement. I'd like to see less static on their power play.
And they've got the creativity to do that. Like, Pettersson, elite mover. We see how clever he is with his movement. And Quinn Hughes, how he can manipulate defenders to go in different directions and how quickly he can turn it back the other way. All that is doable. And when you have two guys that can do that, JT Miller is a smart guy, and we've seen him work net front in previous stops and how clever he is to understand, you know, where the puck can come from and just find quiet spaces on the ice where he can start scoring goals. But there has to be a willingness to execute it. That's the thing. We go too quickly from, oh, the power play isn't working, so fire this guy, Newell Brown being the guy. There is a middle ground, obviously, in there where we can say, Newell Brown's a really intelligent power play coach. You have to start utilizing those options.
You guys are dumbasses. My kids know that rule. It was created to minimize whistles. Shush. That's from Paula. Now, Paula, there's no need to call names.
Sure there is. I mean, she is factual. We are dumbasses at times.
Is it better to be a dumbass than a smartass? Or would you rather just be an ass in general? There's a poll question. Paula, there's no need to call names. We understand what tag up offside is. That play that happened last night is a very unique one. The proximity of the puck carry, all of that, it very rarely happens. Bully for you, Paula, if you knew that.
Sam and Richard, yeah, McAvoy was smart with that play. Couldn't he have just waited until his teammate tagged up and then skated in with the pucks? Not like he was pressured. I mean, why even take a chance of having it be offside when it was really necessary? That is from Sam in Richmond.
So that we could have a teaching moment.
Yeah.
That's why, Sam. We needed
why
a teaching not? Moment last
we,
night.
We needed a way to simplify the rule, and Charlie McAvoy went out of his way to show, hey, this rule sucks.
That's what Bick says today. That's the hill he's willing to die on here today. Emily Kaplan is going to join us next. We'll get her take on star players, star calls, and some of the other major stories going around the National Hockey League. By the way, Mark Giordano, MRI today. Don't know the extent of the damage right now, but that looked bad last night. It's why that loss was the biggest loss on the NHL scoreboard last night. Calgary Flames lose at home to the San Jose Sharks and lose Mark Giordano in the process. This is your home of Canucks hockey, Sportsnet 650. We're on location. It's the grand opening event, Andrew Sherritt Limited. Come join us, 3625 East 1st Avenue. That's just off the highway, between the highway and boundary on 1st in Vancouver. Emily Kaplan next on Canucks Central.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
We'll give them credit. Their team played well. They killed well. They're aggressive, and they turned some pucks over, and they got momentum off their penalty kill today. And, you know, we're not going to go and reinvent the wheel on how to score on the power play. It starts with getting shots. It starts, well, even before that, getting entries into the zone. We didn't do a good job of that tonight, obviously, and you know, they know they got to be better. They will.
Former Boston Bruin Travis Green, head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, after last night's loss. There's certain things
you're
you
so
forget.
Proud of that.
Well, it's only because of what I saw recently that I had forgotten. And this is why it's burned into my memory now. Travis Green played for a number of teams, and you identify him with one or the other, or maybe a couple, but you kind of forget over the course of his career all of the teams he played for and some of the moments he had. And one of those moments was when he was with the Boston Bruins in the playoffs against the Montreal Canadiens. And everybody will remember this part of it, but I personally had forgotten that it was Travis Green that did that. Do you remember when Alexei Kovalev took a little slash on the hands and dropped, left the puck there and looked at the officials and shook his glove and said, where's the call, basically?
And it went the other way.
Into the net.
Yeah.
Game over. Montreal loses in overtime. Travis Green was the guy who did the slash. Like, he was the guy who committed the slash. So I had completely forgotten Green was the guy. I saw the highlight again recently. I went, oh, yeah. That's Travis Green. That's part of his rap sheet. That's
always
great.
Competing.
There you go.
Always on it.
No question about it. Scott Ritchell, it's Bick Nizar. We are live in location. Grand opening event. Fantastic event, by the way, at Andrew Sherritt Limited today. Plumbing, heating, HVAC, irrigation. If you've got a reno ongoing right now, come down here. Get some supplies. There are day-only deals. You'll get an extra 10% off your bill no matter what today. So come down. Pick some stuff up. If you're a contractor and you don't know about this, I can't believe it, but you need to know about this and you need to be on board with Andrew Sherritt. There's a free lunch going on right now. If you've driven by this store, which is 3625 East 1st Avenue in Vancouver, you haven't been in, you want an excuse to come check it out, today's the day. Come put some food in your belly, save some cash in the process. We're between the highway and boundary on 1st. Just off the highway.
You definitely know where this is. You've definitely driven by it a bunch of times near the VPD headquarters. There's tons of food here. It's a blast. Don't worry about the weather. A lot of people having fun here. Stop on by.
You know I always preach patience. Hey, there's weeks it's going to feel like you're not in the playoff race. There's weeks it's going to feel like you'll never be beaten again and you're a lock for the playoffs in this specific division race. Last night felt like more than just a couple of points for the Calgary Flames. It was disheartening on multiple levels. On paper, Calgary had the easiest Pacific Division matchup last night. Edmonton and Arizona, that was going to be a contested game because they're both fighting for the same stuff. Vegas is playing Tampa. Vancouver's in Boston. Calgary's hosting San Jose. Score the first goal in that hockey game as well, but too many passengers look disinterested. Couldn't get the points against the Sharks, and then they lose Mark Giordano in the process. That felt like more than just a two-point squandered opportunity.
And, look, we're at the point of the season where you can't risk losing those 2 points. And, you know, we were talking about this yesterday. Just to me, Calgary feels like they may have the highest upside if all the star players start playing to their level. But here's a star player that's now removed from the team, right? Mark Giordano waiting for an MRI results. It's going to get tougher and tougher for them to keep Nashville at bay or keep Chicago at bay, because if they don't have one of their primary drivers to help the other star players, well, it's more of the burden lies on Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan.
Well, if you can compare and contrast the reaction of the coach in one Alberta NHL city and the other last night, Dave Tippett's team lost 3-0, and Tippett basically came out after and went, you know what, we're coming off a really emotional game on the week. We've had a couple of really emotional games lately, and we played a lot of hockey lately, and this was just kind of a letdown. And, yeah, we weren't good. They were the better team, and that's the way it goes. But it was kind of one of those, well, you know what, we've been playing well enough overall lately that this isn't as big a deal. Jeff Ward had a really telling comment to me in the postgame last night when he said, until we decide that we hate losing enough that we're going to be committed to doing something about it, it's kind of where we're going to be.
And given the expectation of their season, does that sound like a kind of like a desperate measure to you? Like, that's a strong thing to say, and you pick your spots. But at this juncture of the season, because of all the things that are happening, does that feel like a last rallying cry? That if they can't get up for the next game, do they just spiral out of control? Not out of control, but like clearly out of the playoff spot?
Listen, we're 2.5 weeks from the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. This is a team that was almost assuredly going to add a right winger. That's what they were going to do. They got rid of Frolik. They've needed it for a while. And whether it's Tyler Toffoli or someone else, they were going to go get themselves a winger. And now, with Giordano being out, do they try to get more than just a winger? Do they try to get a top 4D somehow, some way? Or do the next 2.5 weeks go poorly enough where they say, I'm not sure we had anything. In fact, let's talk about what we're altering on this roster in terms of moving guys out than anything else.
They now probably go into the power position of the panic meter, or pull position of the panic meter. I think we had Arizona there as recently as yesterday. But now you get a win, things change a bit. We're at a point of the season that every point really comes into play here.
Okay, just because you and Riccio had Arizona on the panic meter doesn't mean I did. I wasn't as worried.
That was
Riccio watches it such affection.
I'm still a little bit worried, but I'd be much more worried if I'm Calgary now because of the injury.
I was waiting for Riccio to tweet about Taylor Hall, a gorgeous assist on the game-winning goal last night for the Coyotes. But I digress. Let's welcome our next guest. Pleasure to have her back on the program here at Canuck Central. Emily Kaplan of ESPN joins us now. Emily, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. We led into you talking about where the Calgary Flames find themselves after what happened last night, a team that currently has a playoff position, but it's a very tenuous hold on one. Look like they're going to be without their captain for a while now and just lost at home to the Sharks. What's your view of the Calgary Flames?
Yeah, I would really worry about the loss of Mark Giordano. Like, I feel like we've seen it, you know, where no one player doesn't make a team, but when it's a player like that, it can make an impact. You know, I think of a team like the Carolina Hurricanes, who lost Dougie Hamilton, have kind of lost their way since then. So, you know, the Pacific Division has been probably the most compelling over the last couple of weeks. You know, and even when a team like the lowly Sharks can beat them on any given night, you know, it's going to be a grind. So I don't think it's easy, but I do have a lot of faith in Jeff Ward. I think he's done some great things with this group. And the good news is we know that they haven't really reached their potential. Like, we haven't seen the Johnny Gaudreau that we're used to seeing, for example.
Who across the league, though, shares that panic level that Calgary should have?
That's a great question. I you know, there's a couple teams that I'm really fascinated by in the next 2 weeks, just because the trade deadline's looming and they can go one of two directions. Like, one of them to me would be the Nashville Predators. Like, we've seen what David Poile thinks of his group when he fired his coach, a very successful coach, in Peter Laviolette, because he's like, we got to get this thing going. And as of, you know, saying this, they're right on the playoff bubble right now, just kind of looking inside and wondering what kind of team they are. So I think there's a little bit of a panic in them, you know, and then there's teams like the Arizona Coyotes, who put such a premium on making the playoffs this offseason, have injected so much more talent than they had before with Phil Kessel and Taylor Hall, just, you know, plus all the trades they've made in the last couple of years with, you know, pretty much the Blackhawks. And if they don't make the playoffs, I think that would be a huge disappointment for them.
You're absolutely right. And at least an Arizona Coyotes team has perhaps the cavalry coming in Darcy Kemper. If he gets back healthy and is the guy that we saw who was the best goalie in the league for the first part of the season. And then you look at some of these other teams, and one you didn't mention, but I'm sure you have a comment on, is the Toronto Maple Leafs, where this is easily the biggest start of Michael Hutchinson's career, and it's a pretty massive game for the Leafs all of a sudden tonight against the Rangers. We look at them, Emily, as a team that should be in the playoffs. We basically took it for granted that they were going to be there, and Yet because of the one big obvious flaw in between the pipes and the way that goaltending position has played out over the year, it might not even matter if they get there.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, we focused so much on their defense the last few years. And, look, they probably could use some defensive help still. But goaltending is a big question mark. And, yeah, the health of Freddie Anderson is huge because if you look at the goalie market, like, there's nothing that really seems like a slam dunk for Toronto right now. Like, Alexander Georgiev would be great, but are they really willing to give up a first-round pick? That's what it seems like the Rangers are hoping for, and they have the luxury of waiting until the draft where they can get more for him. And obviously, Toronto doesn't want to wait that long. You know, I'm in Chicago. I'd be shocked if Chicago gives up on either Robin Lehner or Corey Crawford, especially as they now look like they're within striking distance of the playoffs. And then, like, okay, you're going to go for Jack Campbell? Are you going to go for Aaron Dell, who suddenly like looks like he's kind of decent for the Sharks lately? Like, there's not great options there. So, yeah, I am worried a little bit about the Toronto Maple Leafs. That said, their offense can overcompensate for a lot.
What do we make of what's going on in Buffalo? Not even just the on-ice product or even the how the front office is going to, you know, traverse these options they have. But, you know, there was that clip that went viral of a fan calling into a station there and just being, you know, overly upset of everything that's going on. Is public trust between them, the fans, and the Sabres kind of at an all-time low?
It's interesting. You know, Terry and Kim Pegula, because Kim is very active in owning the franchise. They bought the team in 2011. They made that playoff that first year and haven't come back since. And I think they're really frustrated. As for the public perception, you know, they own the Bills too, and the Bills also had a really good season. So maybe that earned a little bit of forgiveness from the fan base. But I would be surprised if, you know, they finish out the year and they don't make the playoffs and there weren't big changes, because I do think this is a owners and it's like, what else could we possibly do? You know, we've got a franchise player in Jack Eichel. We won the number one pick in Rasmus Dahlin. We've cycled through now, I believe it's 6 coaches, 3 GMs, and we can't figure it out. And, you know, talking to Jack Eichel as recently as the All-Star game, I know he loves Ralph Kruger and he really is responding to him. And I do think that the ownership is going to do everything to keep Jack Eichel happy because he's the best thing they've got going. And I do think that Ralph Kruger will fit into the long-term equation. But maybe if this continues and we have another hot start that was derailed and they kind of fall apart at the end of the season, we could see some structural changes in management.
You mentioned that you're in Chicago. They're one of the teams that, you know, is nipping at the heels of the Calgary Flames and the Arizona Coyotes and all that. What's just the general mood of how they, you know, they're trending as they get closer to the trade deadline and what some expectations are for them internally?
Yeah, so, you know, John McDonough, who's the team president here, he dictates a lot of what goes on. And I know he's frustrated and the front office is frustrated. They want to be in the playoffs. They're not comfortable in the position they've been in the last couple years. So I do think they're one of those teams where, like, the next 2 weeks are so crucial. They, you know, entered last night's game against the Wild on a pretty nice streak. They still picked up a point. They've now played again at home tonight against the Bruins and then going to Western Canada swing. If they come out with a couple points, I don't think they're going to be big sellers at the deadline. I already mentioned the goalies. You know, I don't think they would do something drastic like get rid of Brandon Saad or Duncan Keith. You know, I think if anything, they would maybe part ways with Eric Gustafsson, who is a very good offensive defenseman, but is a UFA this summer and will have some decent suitors. But I could see them trying to go all in because just a berth into the playoffs would be a huge win for this group. That said, it can hold a rail with this road trip that I mentioned. You know, it's bookended by stops in Winnipeg, which is not an easy place to play. And if 2 weeks they drop a couple of these games, maybe they're a seller and kind of retool for next year. And another team, which I would keep an eye on their front office this summer, because like I said, they don't like losing and they don't like losing for extended periods of time.
In conversation with ESPN's Emily Kaplan today on Canucks Central, still on Chicago, there's talk in Vancouver, as you may have heard, about Jacob Markstrom's contract extension, what that looks like, if they can get something done. Two UFAs to be in between the pipes for the Chicago Blackhawks. What sense do you get of what their plan is with their goaltending moving forward?
To be honest, I don't know. And I think they are keeping their options open. You know, Corey Crawford is a name where you're like, wow, he would be such a great candidate for any team who needs a goalie down the stretch. Just the way this team operates and the way they get things done, I can't imagine them doing him like that. Like, he's going to not leave on his own terms, but it'll come this summer when they decide what's going to happen. I know he really enjoys being in Chicago. You know, they're going to have to make a choice. I don't think they can afford to pay both of these goaltenders next year. It'll probably be Robin or Corey. I have a sense they probably know what they're going to do, but they're not really revealing it. But my guess is they ride out the rest of the year with these two and then figure it out from there.
Did you happen to catch the Boston-Vancouver game? And in particular, there was a goal that I have an issue with, the first goal that, you know, had an onside play. That was clearly onside, but does it feel like we can simplify the offside rule in general?
Yes, and I know you had an issue with it. You texted me, and I went and watched it, and it was all an issue of tagging, right? Like, Charlie McAvoy was at the line, and I can't remember what teammate it was, had to come back and tag. And yeah, I think there's still, you know, a little bit of a gray area that even video review can't clear up. That said, I don't think it's been a hugely prevalent issue in the league this year. Like, it's really damning games. Then again, if you ask the Boston Bruins, they actually might say yes, because they've had a ton of goals called against them the other way, so they were just happy to get this one right.
I just feel like we'll get to a playoff series, and if that shows up again, like, it's a bigger issue. It's fine if it happens in February, but, you know, clearly that does exist, that a loophole can be created. It's a bigger issue if it happens during the playoffs.
Yeah, it totally is. And, you know, I'd like to think that when it comes to the playoffs, they'll have everyone and their mother in the building and on call in Toronto, and they'll make sure they get it right.
We've been having the debate with our fan base, listenership, throughout the course of our shows today about star calls and whether there need to be more of them in the NHL. And Pettersson gets taken down yesterday. It's particularly egregious because of the player in question. It would have been a penalty call anyway. It just went uncalled. I know that there are missed calls in every single game, but it got us on the topic of, does the league need to shift a little closer to the way the NFL protects its quarterbacks, the way the NBA protects its best players and makes sure that they're taken care of physically on the court and that they get foul calls? Do we need to have more star calls in the NHL?
You know, I'll probably sound like what the NHL would sound like if they were asked this question in the Department of Player Safety, and it would be, no, we just need to make sure we get all the right calls, and player safety is at the forefront of everything, and it doesn't matter what player is, you know, the victim of it. It needs to be right. That said, it is really troublesome when you see a hit like Pettersson took last night, or if you see any time, it feels like a star player is being just targeted a little bit more. And you know, I wouldn't want refs to use their leniency, but I would want them to be more aware of it.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of our listeners come out as well, and maybe it has to do, and this was suggested earlier, that, hey, these star players, they draw a lot of calls, and there's a fatigue on the part of the officials to keep calling infractions against the same player. Do you think that exists?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, and if you think of it, like, often star players are puck possession players. They're the guys with the puck a lot. They're guys who are faster than the opponents and guys have to catch up with, and sometimes guys have to use other tactics to try to steal the puck away. Yeah, I'd like to think, though, if you ask any official, they say, we'll call a call when there is a call. And, hey, if Johnny Gaudreau, or I don't know, I'm as an example, he's a guy that gets slashed a lot, is getting slashed, we'll call the slash when it's a slash, not because, you know, we haven't called four slashes beforehand.
Great stuff, as always, Emily. We really appreciate your insight. Keep up the great work with ESPN, and thank you very much for taking the time.
My pleasure, guys. Have a good one.
That is Emily Kaplan, formerly a regular on your show. She of ESPN, we try to get her on as often as we can. I noticed she retweeted a tweet that said, for that rivalry series game going on at the Honda Center this Saturday south of the border, they've actually sold over 11,000 tickets already, so it'll be the highest attended women's national team game in the States, obviously taking on Team Canada. Should mention here on Canuck Central, those two teams in action tonight, rivalry series, Rogers Arena. It was a great game over in Victoria, great finish, dramatic. Hopefully we get something like that tonight here in town.
The growth of this game is massive, and it's obviously pushed forward and spearheaded because of Canada-US, right? But this is a big step forward to just keep making these events part of our regular sports culture. And with that, the league will come into play. You know, I know they're fighting for one league and all that. That will slowly morph into reality for everything. And yeah, it's events like this that help push it all forward.
Yeah, and hopefully there's a good enough attendance in some of these markets where executives are going back to the NHL, which we know is interested in backing a women's league eventually.
They just want to do it the right way.
Correct. But hopefully there's enough executives going back and say, hey, you know what? There's more interest in our market than perhaps some people would have anticipated. And, yes, I do think this would work on X, you know, this many game basis, or here's how we think we can do it. The fact that it continues to be at the forefront of conversation means more people suggest ideas, and the more people talk, the closer we get to some sort of solution.
There's a reality exists that for every NHL franchise that exists, there's a WNHL franchise that exists. That reality exists. How long does it take to get there? That's a question that has to be asked. But, you know, the league will at some point embrace having a women's National Hockey League. It's just a matter of when.
Well, it's time for us to turn the controls over. Thanks for joining me here today, buddy.
Love this place.
Yeah, we're live in location. Second time we've been here. Hopefully for you, you've been here multiple occasions. But if you haven't been to Andrew Sherritt Limited, it's the grand opening event. This is the perfect time to check it out. You're going to get yourself some lunch. You're going to save money because they've got day-only deals. They've got 10% off your bill at the end of the day if you come down and buy something here today. So plumbing, heating, HVAC, irrigation, you name it, the experts here will take care of you. It's 3625 East 1st Avenue in Vancouver. That's on East 1st between the highway and boundary. It's really easy to find. If you're traveling on the highway, you will see it on your way by. Great hosts here today. Should I call Randeep and reach great hosts? Should I do that? Should that be my segue? Great hosts coming up next, Pick. That's what we're going to do. We're going to turn it over to them. It's Reach Deep coming your way. Right after this, what do you guys have coming up on the program today?
Patrick Johnson, Colby Armstrong, all 4:30 for Colby and 5 for PJ.
Now, any day soon, will you guys get the whole band back together? Or is the sickness that runs through that operation going to affect everybody?
They sent me a message this morning, and I thought they were both going to be down, and I sent them the Will Smith meme of like being the only guy in the room. So it's me and Andrew Walker tonight.
Should be fun. You guys in conversation, as you mentioned, with Patrick Johnson of the province. Have yourselves a great day. Reach Deep is up next, and you're home with the Canucks. Sportsnet 650.